Hi, welcome back to Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Berlin, and I'm here with a guest I'm really excited to talk to because we've sort of known of each other, but we've never gotten a chance to meet. So this is really exciting. I'm here with Katie Brooks. Katie, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm very happy to be here. First of all, thank you for inviting me. I've been working with CVCA for next year. Will be 20 years, actually.
And I'm sorry, tell us what's CVCA?
Oh, sorry. CVCA Cardiac Care for Pets. So we are the largest, actually, veterinary cardiology group in the world. And I've been working with them since 2001. Started as a technician and just over the years got more and more involved in management. And I serve as their CEO now.
That is awesome. I love to hear about technicians who have really like tackled moving up, doing big jobs, management roles that we just kind of, you know, we don't put that box around the word technician. And I just love that. Like, I love to hear that. So that's super exciting. And one of the reasons I'm really excited to talk to Katie is that we are kind of in the same area. So I actually refer patients to the CVCA practice in Towson, Maryland, pretty much every time I'm at the clinic, it feels like, because they're amazing. And they're about an hour away from where I practice. So that might come up later because we have that connection. And that I was really stoked to do this with you.
Yeah, me too.
And this, just as a reminder for our listeners, this is part of a 5-part series, which is generously sponsored by Care Credit and Pets Best, where we're looking at veterinary care from a proactive point of view. So, you know, we're talking about what we can do not to help our patients be healthier, not just today, but over their entire lifetimes. And one way that we can do this is by building healthier relationships, not only with the clients, but also with other members of the veterinary community. And today we're talking about a really neat concept that I personally wish we discussed a lot more in vet med, which is the idea that if general practitioners, specialty practitioners, and ER worked together more collaboratively to care for our pets and our clients, it can really benefit client satisfaction and the way our pets live and how healthy they are. And this includes having open conversations, of course, about both the emotional and the financial costs for clients, because we all know that those can go up really quickly whenever emergency or referral services are involved. So Katie, you and I have never actually met or talked before, but I always tell my clients that CVCA is where I would take my own pet if they needed a cardiologist, but I haven't actually met any of you. And I tell this to my clients, but you don't know that. I don't call you guys on the phone and tell you how grateful I am every day that you're so close and that you're so amazing. Why don't we do this? Like, how can we change the way we think about the people that we send our clients to see and that we trust to take care of our patients?
Well, first of all, I have to say it makes me so happy to hear you say that, you know, you're so comfortable sending your clients to us, because I know that's really important with us being an extension of your practice, essentially, for you to have that trust. I mean, that really makes me happy. For us, it's something that we proactively discuss as an organization. And I think that it's critical to ensuring that it becomes part of the fabric of our culture. So the reality is that none of us can ever truly walk in the shoes of those around us. So there needs to be some built-in understanding. So my team knows that some patients come to us because of awareness, and some clients because they've seen us with prior pets, and some because their friend told them to, but the vast majority of cases that we see come directly from the primary care veterinarian, you. And so we are thankful for this, and we don't criticize. So what I've reminded my team of over and over, and most of us who have worked in other areas of veterinary medicine remember, is that sometimes the ER vet or the primary care vet has very limited time to diagnose and treat these patients, especially now. So we're not doing our job if we're not fully in support and spirit of helping them. So we say of those both in and out of our organization, assume positive intent, don't make judgments. And I think this shows in our relationship.
Yeah, I think that is so great, because I do feel like when we're thinking about referral. You know, we think, oh, this person is an expert and they're going to judge how I worked up this case, or this person thinks only in their little box and, you know, doesn't realize everything that I'm having to deal with at my end. But you guys do know that, you know, you do this every day. It's your world. And I love, love what you just said, which is that you see the CVCA as an extension of our practice, and that we're not really referring a patient out of our practice when we send them to you. We are extending the arm of our practice into yours so that your doctors and your technicians can be part of our patient's healthcare team. And I think that is so important. So I think we know that, you know, even though we don't get to talk directly, I think you can feel it if in the communications between a referral hospital, a specialty hospital, and a general practice, you can kind of feel whether there's that judgment or that built-in trust in those communications. And I think we feel that, and that's why we feel so comfortable referring to you. So can you briefly talk about the concept behind something called the Collaborative Care Coalition?
Sure, absolutely. So the Collaborative Care Coalition is a group of animal health care professionals, providers, and their goal is ultimately optimal health care for the animals, right? Advance the profession as a whole and just work on this relationship between the primary care veterinarians and the specialists, because it's so important, not only for the welfare of our own profession and what we do for each other, but ultimately for the patient. The patient benefits most from that level of partnership and collaboration. So their goal is really just to increase awareness and have this conversation that we're having now.
Yeah, that is awesome. I am all for that. And I love the idea of each pet and client or family having like this army of medical professionals kind of teaming up to keep them healthy or get them back to health. I think that's great. It makes me feel better about my own pets, is that there's this army there, because I can't be part of that army, of course. Like when it comes to my own pets, I'm totally useless. So I need an army.
Absolutely.
We're all like that, I think, with our own pets, right?
Totally. And I think it's best for the pet and the client and the general practitioner. A few years ago, we had collaborated with some of our primary care practices and produced our JAVMA article, which is called The Impact of Collaborative Care on Survival Time with Dogs with Congestive Heart Failure. And that showed that patients with confirmed congestive heart failures live significantly longer when their care team included a board-certified cardiologist and the primary care veterinarian. So many of us feel our pets are family and they deserve the same level of care that we get. And so the only way to do that is to have a positive collaborative relationship with other members of the care team. And in the end, this results in better quality and quantity time with our pets.
Very cool. So it's actually backed up by research that that this collaborative approach really helps pets live longer. So how have you seen this idea of collaborative practice evolve in your time at CVCA? Like, do you think as an industry we're getting more collaborative, or do you feel like we're getting more kind of stuck in our own silos?
I think we are over time getting more collaborative. And I think that there's some reasons for that. I think that increasing the communication through our, you know, outreach to primary care vets, through CE events, through group meetings and things like that helps. I think also as an industry, we're all getting busier, especially right now. So we know now to stay kind of in our area. My doctors know where their expertise begins and ends, and primary care vets have to be really good at a huge range of things. So it's about who's best equipped to handle this particular thing, just like in any team. And it doesn't diminish the importance of any of the individuals involved. So I think it's actually getting better.
That's great. It's good to hear that from your perspective. And I think as medicine gets more specialized, we're going to have to rely on each other more, right? Because the days of the kind of country vet who literally, if there was a surgery that needed to be done, he was going to do it, you know, at 3 a.m. if he had to, this like headlamp on, because we didn't have any other resources. Like, there's fewer and fewer areas where that has to be true. And we really rely on specialists a lot now, which is a good thing, because that means we can all get better at what we do. But of course, that does mean communication becomes extra important. And we know that can slip through the cracks a little bit when we're all so busy.
Absolutely.
So one of the areas you had mentioned that you said, you know, that especially in ER, a lot of times people don't have veterinarians and vet techs just don't have the time to work up a patient the way that they want to a lot of times because they're stacked up with patients. And one of the places that I feel like I've seen that relationship suffer a little bit has been with ER and GP. It just seems like that relationship can be a little bit contentious, maybe because we're not communicating as well because we don't have that opportunity. Do you see that as well? Can you talk specifically about ER at all?
I do. Right. So that I think part of what plays into that dynamic is an ER visit is really tough on the client, right? It's unexpected. Yeah. It can be expensive. It's highly emotionally charged. So what happens is, you know, they go to the ER not really having planned any of that. They're super worried about their pet. And then they're trying to talk to their general practitioner about it. And that general practitioner may not have an update from the ER vet yet because, you know, they're super busy. And so, you know, the communication, like you said, that's one of the things that falls through the cracks when you're so focused on patient care. And I think it's just the fact that those visits are so emotionally charged that taking time to make sure you're proactively communicating. Fortunately, in our group, we have a more predictable schedule. So we know that we can get that update out to you before the next patient comes in, but that's just not a reality on the ER side. So what we have to remember is, you know, you don't know what the other side was dealing with at the time, right? The ERs could have been completely crushed, couldn't gotten the GP the update. And on the other hand, the GP is having this panic client call them saying, I was at the ER, I don't know what to do next. And they have no information. And it's just tough on everybody. So the more we can get our processes down to make sure that even if you don't get the full update, hey, we saw your patient this weekend, you know, more's coming, just as a heads up. Those are the conversations that I know take place in the emergency room is, how do we better keep our primary care vets updated when we know we can't get that full report to them right away?
Yeah, that would be very helpful. I think a lot of times just to have a heads up that we're going to get that panicked call or that maybe we should call to check on this pet and see if the client is having a meltdown at home, because I've been that client.
I was that client. Absolutely.
Oh, no.
Yeah, everything's fine, but you remember what it's like on the other side of the table.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. It's just acutely, it's a bad way to be reminded that communication could be better. So do you think that on our end, on the general practice end, you know, you said thinking proactively, trying to get ahead of these things, like at the ER end, a call would be proactive if they haven't been able to send the records over. But what about GP vets and team members? Do you think we can do more to kind of prepare clients for those situations, especially when it comes to cost and the value of that care and what that experience could be like?
Absolutely. That's really tough. We in cardiology were very fortunate that almost every case is about the same cost, right? So we can work with our vets and tell them this is pretty much what it's going to be every time, with few exceptions. On the ER side and a lot of other specialties, there's a huge range, right? So you're walking in and you have no idea how much it could be. And of course, that you as the family veterinarian are going to take some of that stress on, because you're asking someone to go into this sort of unknown and potentially spend a lot of money. As veterinary professionals, we make judgments sometimes based on what we think the client wants to spend, and we have to unlearn that. So we have this inherent guilt in all of us because we're in a job that we would all like to do for free, but we can't. And so we have to watch how we talk with clients about money. It has to be factual. You know, our definition of expensive and theirs might be different. But I get it. It's hard because you know the expense wasn't planned for. It isn't well defined. And it reflects on you as someone who's making this recommendation to them. So usually, you know, the best case is the conversation is, here's what your pet needs. Here's how much it's likely to cost. Or if you don't know, you refer the cost discussions to the other practice. Here's the potential impact of not going. One of the things that we discussed in recommending recheck exams is, since heart disease is mostly silent, this is how we stay on top of changes that require intervention. And while you think a recheck might be expensive, the alternative could be an emergency room visit, in which case the disease has progressed too far for us to be as much help as we could have early on. So I think a lot of it is, again, communication. If you know on the front end what your partners are charging, that helps you to be able to have the conversation with the client. But it's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah. And especially when it comes to, like, I really appreciate that about sending people to a cardiologist, because like you said, a lot of times you kind of can see that cost coming and they can prepare for it or budget for it. But ER is a whole different ballgame. And even for something like internal medicine, for instance, because I remember being in school and like we'd always have to go out and talk about the estimates, you know, the treatment plans with the interns, with the people in the waiting room, back when we had waiting rooms with people in them.
Those were the
so weird. I know, it seems so dangerous now. Like I can't even imagine a waiting room with a whole bunch of people. But, you know, we'd sit down and the internal medicine resident or intern would give this estimate to the client and it would be like $2,500 to $4,500. And you're like, well, that's a big range difference. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, and they would just have to sign it and say, well, what are we going to do? And then they would go over the whole thing. But really this number just was like hanging over the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the Collaborative Care Coalition has done some research on this, right? And they found that cost is the primary barrier to referral for clients.
Right.
And that doesn't surprise me at all. I don't know about you, but it would be my primary barrier if I had to go to a specialist with my pet. And it does seem like collaborating on that financial care aspect between GP and specialty would be also super beneficial. What kinds of things do you guys do to kind of defray the cost when something's going to be out of range for clients?
Yeah, I'm in big favor of that discussion as well, because I think options for clients are always great, right? It gives them the peace of mind, especially in difficult times like we're in now. It gives them the opportunity to be proactive with these illnesses, which can ultimately be less expensive than trying to manage them in the end when things get out of hand. So for us, we're always watching the trends. You know, I want to know from my staff, are more people asking about payment plans? Or, you know, what are we seeing? Are we seeing that it's harder for people to pay? And we want to get ahead of that. And we want to, you know, reach out and figure out what are our options. We want to let our primary care vets know that we have options so that they can talk with their clients and say, okay, I'm recommending that you go see the cardiologist. Here's about what it costs and here's the different ways that you can pay. So I think any kind of flexibility that we can offer is key in allowing people to really be able to take the best care of their pets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, knowing clients might know that their pet insurance will cover certain things at our practice, but they might not realize that a lot of pet insurance, like Pets Best insurance, could be used at specialty clinics as well as at GP, and so can Care Credit. So if you have Care Credit already for something that we did at our practice, you can use Care Credit at most specialists. And that is really important for clients to know. And sometimes I feel like we assume that people know their options because we might have mentioned them before or because they used them previously. But that doesn't, I mean, when you're emotional and you're looking at this potentially huge expense, you're not always thinking about that stuff. So we have to bring that up before people are in that mental state, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Besides cost, what do you feel like are some other concerns that general practitioners and that their clients have about referral?
You know, I think a lot of it is when you send a client out of your building to another one and you don't have control over the experience that they have. So it's how long do they have to wait to get in to see the specialist, or how long do they have to wait in the ER? Is the communication with that client going to be the same as what you would? You know, are they going to be building a long-term relationship with this client and really really putting a lot of effort into making sure that they understand how things operate there? And, you know, are you going to get the communication back? You know, I've had a lot of primary care vets tell me, I don't want to refer it and then have all of these things happen. And next thing you know, the client spent a ton of money and nothing was ever brought back to me. I wasn't part of that decision. So a lot of the conversations within specialty groups are, how do we make sure that once the client gets here, if there's a decision to be made, that the primary care vet gets the information so that they're in the loop and that decision can be made as a team with the client, with the primary care vet, with the specialist. I think that communication is really important. And I think another barrier is, you know, just people worried about being judged when they send a case in. And I think that they worry about being judged on their handling of a case. And so that's why in our practice, we just say, this is never okay. It's never okay to judge. You weren't there. You didn't have the information, the specific challenges that they had. And I think that the service that we give reflects directly on the primary care vet who recommend us. So, you know, it's a really great responsibility, and we have to treat it as such. So, you know, we like to solicit client feedback on, you know, how did we do? And we want to share that with the vets. And if things went well, we want to let the vet know that. And if things didn't go well, we want to let the vet know that too. And what did we learn from it? We have to remember that the primary care vet is where our caseload relies. So our service to them is just as important as it is to the client. And we need to make them feel secure about telling their people to come see us, that we are on the same team. And that goal, that, you know, working around this goal to make the pet's health outcome be as optimal as it can be.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. I kind of want to just play that back like a few times when I'm thinking about how I'm writing up my records. There was one time that I had a team member send my records to a neurologist, and he was actually somebody I greatly respect and somebody who had been a resident when I was a student at Cornell. And they sent the records over before I had written in them. So the records had the tech notes from the exam, but they were basically just like shorthand technician notes and not my words. And they definitely were not complete. You know, I think the dog was like, it said, walking in circles, eyes look funny or something like that. And I, you know, I was like dying of humiliation because I'm like, who's going to be like, what did I learn in school? You know, and really it was just
so funny.
Shorthand to remind me of things. And it just wasn't finished. It was just a mistake. But, you know, we really do care what our specialists think of us. And if we get a comment back from a specialist that says, you know, you did a great job working up this case, it makes my whole week to hear that. Like I get so excited. I probably still remember some of those cases because it was just such a good feeling. And, you know, I think that just highlights how important it is, not just not to judge, like you said, but also to give feedback, you know, that communication is important too. Not just this is what we did, this is what the client told us, but also to say you did a great job, or thank you for sending them to us, because that shows that you trust us and that means a lot to us.
Exactly. And, you know, you just have to remember you're on the exact same team, and the way that you handle the case and the way that you speak to the client, you just have to make sure that it's in a way that you would want to have it happen if you were on the other side. You know, it's just that's the thing that you have to think of all the time.
Together, Care Credit and Pets Best are empowering a lifetime of care for more pets by helping clients be financially prepared. Our simple, flexible, budget-friendly choices work together to help them manage the cost of care. Routine to unexpected, first year to senior care. Providing financial care for pet parents supports lifelong care for patients. Learn more at carecredit.com/provider-center/veterinary. Yeah, I love that so much, because we are always talking about, you know, I think we should always be talking about now about not judging clients, because we don't know what their situation is, and we don't know why they make the decisions that they do sometimes. And we have to extend that courtesy to each other as practitioners as well. So let's talk about that relationship between specialists, ER, general practice a little bit more. The Collaborative Care Coalition also found in their research that only a little over half of the general practice vets that they surveyed felt that specialists treated them with respect and a non-judgmental attitude. Okay, and that is not ideal. But I'm sure that it goes both ways, because I've heard friends who are in specialty practice complain about referring vets not setting their clients up appropriately as far as their expectations for cost or how long it was going to be to get an appointment, or not sending the records over like they were supposed to, or not filling them out, those referral forms that we get, you know, and I'm sure that there can be friction and kind of tension on both sides. How can we improve these relationships? How can we all act like we're on the same team?
That's a great question. I think that there's always any kind of us versus them comes from a lack of knowledge or just forgetting what it's like to be in that position. So when you have a specialist who never practiced general medicine, it's they just don't understand the demands and how difficult it is and how much you have to know and how many different things you have to be good at. So I prefer to select residents who have had experience in that realm, you know, to some degree, because I think that it makes them better, well-rounded, more understanding doctors in the end. But if they don't have that experience, we just have to keep having that conversation over and over. Like, okay, this is what it's like on the other side. You don't know that, or you don't remember that. But otherwise, it just clouds the way you deal with people. And the research that they found makes me sad, because it shouldn't be that way. You know, it really shouldn't be that they're not treated with respect, because everybody in this industry deserves that level of respect. And they're, you know, whatever your specialty is or whatever you do every day, there's always things to be learned and gained from other people. In terms of the expectations, I know that's a really big thing. We in specialty need to give the primary care vets information. Here's the process for having your clients come see us. We actually have, in non-COVID times, the ability to bring in our primary care vets to walk in their client's shoes, go through an appointment. This is exactly what happens. Here's how much it costs. In the absence of that information, people make things up. You just have to continually reach out and say, this is what's happening. Pick up the phone when they call you and when they need you. Make them feel comfortable asking questions. You know, we help all the time with cases that we don't end up seeing. It's equity in that relationship. So for me, I want all of the vets who work with us to really feel that comfort level of, we are here for you, whether it's a case you sent, whether it's a case you can't send, it's a question that you have. Our role should be that we increase the knowledge in veterinary medicine and we elevate the level of care. And that's how we do it, by supporting and working with each other.
I think you guys set a really great example of that, because I have called down to your office and found that, you know, and I knew this client probably wasn't going to come to you. You know, there's just, you just know, even if they're thinking about it, and you know, said that very honestly and still had some really good advice from your doctors. And I've been really fortunate to have that from other practitioners as well. But I've also had less ideal experiences calling for advice from specialists or talking about a mutual patient. And that kind of soured me a little bit for a while on the experience, because you don't want to have those conversations. But I also know specialists are really busy too. And having somebody call and ask for free advice when you're never going to see a financial benefit or a return on that is hard. I mean, we don't like that either. So I really appreciate every time that happens when I speak to a specialist or an ER doctor, because that I definitely mooch free advice off ER doctors too. Sometimes you just gotta, right? But one thing that we were talking before about, before we started recording about, and I wanted to bring up while we were on here together, is that one time, and I remember this, even though it was probably like a year ago or more, that I got a thank you note from CVCA. And it was signed by a few of the team members. And it was to say, thank you for referring. And I believe it was a specific patient. And I don't know if there was something special about that case or what, but I just felt so good that I got this thank you note in the mail. I mean, how often do you get like a little card in the mail that just says thank you for doing something you were going to do anyway? You know, made me feel amazing. Why don't we do that more? Like, whose idea was that? Do you know? And why don't we do that more?
Exactly. It was our idea. So we get our teams together. And first of all, I'm so glad it had that impact. Honestly, that makes me really happy. This is a stressful profession. It's a profession that takes a lot out of people. And so I feel like if there's moments that we can bring each other joy, we should just jump on that. It is a conversation that takes place in our practice routinely. We will shut down. We will get together. We will say, how can we do things better for our employees? How do we treat each other better? How do we treat our clients better? How do we treat our primary care vets better? And that's one of those ideas that came up, is just, we do appreciate. We appreciate every case that comes to us. In terms of why don't we do that more, it always comes down to time, right? Like it's always like, oh, I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to do that. But what we don't realize is that the miscommunications and difficulties that come out of not reaching out and not working on that relationship takes more time and makes us more frustrated. So I think telling doctors and practices that you appreciate them is huge. You know, we have a lot of initiatives. We send out calendars and Valentines. We do lunch and learns. We do the thank you notes. And we work that into our workflow because it is important to us. So we say, okay, if it's important to us, we make the time to do that. And just like as you were, you know, talking about earlier, reaching out for that help, we reach out to our primary care vets for help as well. They answer questions that we can't answer. So I think it's all of that is just, it's held in a space of gratitude for us. At any time someone calls us about a case, whether or not we get money from it is not the issue. We've helped somebody. And ultimately that means that the next time you have a person who needs to come see the cardiologist, then we're the ones that you're going to call.
Yeah, totally. It really can and should be a mutually beneficial relationship, and not just financially, but in a way that makes both sides feel good. Who doesn't want to go to work and feel good about that? Like, we all know we're helping pets, and that's the number one reason why we're all here. But like, that doesn't mean we can't help each other too.
Exactly. It's so true. It's so true.
And I think also like one note about thank you notes, because I historically have not been the best about writing thank you notes when you're supposed to. Like, I'm just really not, I have not always been the most polite person in that way. And I really regret that now. But one of my favorite things now is to send thank you notes for, you know, essentially no reason. Like, you're just glad that this person did what they did, even if they were going to do it regardless. And I've been known to send thank you notes to clients just for being nice. And it makes me feel amazing.
Exactly. And I love that so much, because how often do we as a people take the time to complain about something or give negative feedback? And when things go well, we don't. But I feel like that's such a huge driver in human behavior. You need the positive feedback to counteract the negative feedback, which you're sure to get, right?
Right.
So
and I remember.
Exactly. So same thing, you know, whenever I can fill out a survey or give somebody props, I try to do it, because I know that having been in management for so long, it's like, well, everybody comes to you with the problems. Someone right. ever calls and says, hey, everything worked really well today. So I think it's important to do that. And it does make you feel good to do that.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us into our last little segment, which is what we call our keep it brief segment, but it can be as brief or as lengthy as you like. But one question that I've been asking every guest in this 5-part series is, how do you think this proactive approach about patient care relates to the topic of veterinary team wellness, which is we're talking about so much now? Do you feel like they're connected?
100%. And I will say veterinary team wellness is something that I'm personally very passionate about. When I came to work with CVCA, I felt appreciated and heard and valued for the first time in this industry. And so my entire career has been focused around trying to make that environment for other people, and not just in my practice, but in all the practices that we work with as well. We are in an industry that, like I said earlier, is hard on people for a lot of reasons, and it attracts people with big hearts who are just good people. So I think that anything that we can do to improve the conditions of our staff is so important, you know, so making this be about collaboration and communication and appreciation, all of that trickles down to the day in and day out stress that our team members feel, right? If we are not communicating well at practice levels, it's going to impact them. It's going to impact patient care. It increases the stress on an already stressful work environment. Just being in the field is difficult, you know, especially right now, you know, obviously our practices are all under tremendous strain from the demand, mm-hmm. and people are stressed out more than normal. So normally we're dealing with high emotions from our clients, and now it's a lot worse. So I think everything that we do to try to improve the industry and improve collaboration and improve communication trickles down to every single member of our team that's on the floor doing this day in and day out. And whatever we can do to make that easier for them is really of the highest importance.
So much agree with everything that you just said. And I also love that, you know, you're a technician. You've been in that trench with them.
Yes.
You know what it's like to be out there. And, you know, we talk a lot about technician burnout and how vet techs are leaving practice and leaving vet med. And I just really want to highlight the fact that you are a technician and now you are CEO of a company that is doing this the right way and that you're making team wellness a priority. And it's so important for everybody, not just veterinarians, to realize that they have the ability to make that change and to do things that matter in this profession, even if sometimes that means not being on the floor temporarily or permanently, you can still make a change for good. So I love that so much.
Exactly.
And ultimately, we're all here to take care of the patients and happy teams, especially when it comes to respect within our profession, respect for each other. And that collaborative approach can only make things better for the patients, which is why we're all getting up and coming in every day. So,
exactly. And everybody's doing the best that they can under the circumstances that they had that day. And that's what we have to remember about each other and support each other, because we all get into those spaces where we make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Every single one of us.
Yeah.
And so if we don't have the patience and the grace to be able to support each other through that, then, you know, it just makes things tremendously more difficult. So kudos to you for having this conversation. I think it's super important. And I was very grateful for the opportunity to be involved.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Katie, from one Katie to another. I'm really glad that we did this. This was so much fun. And, you know, I'm really excited that Care Credit and Pets Best was up for this topic. Like, they were really excited about this topic also. So thanks to them for sponsoring this episode and the other four in this series about looking at a lifetime of veterinary care, from, you know, whether it's the financial conversations to the emotional costs for clients and team. Managing all of those things is going to mean that pets get better care for a lifetime. So also important.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much, Katie. And thanks to our listeners. We'll see you next time.
Thank you as well.
Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us. And thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all of the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. And you can drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcasts is a Brief Media production.